across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don Rue, on this Thursday morning, April 25th, 2024. Nice to have you along at 7:06 on this Thursday morning. Coming up this hour, right-wing justices on the U.S. Supreme Court indicated on Wednesday their support for state-based abortion bans that do not provide legal protection for doctors when a situation is clearly a health emergency but not necessarily life-threatening. We'll talk to Dr. Kristen Lyerly about that in just moments. Our Women Win Wisconsin segment, powered by Motherhood for Good, will highlight another legislative candidate in the Fox Valley. State Representative Lori Palmieri will be here. Luke Mathers will have last night's recap of Top Chef Wisconsin. And if you missed our last hour, where we talked about how the Republican members of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee are now deciding to sit on millions of dollars that could be used toward opioid addiction treatment, well, you can catch that last hour, like everything that we do on our talk shows here on Civic Media, by going to civicmedia.us. You can get a list of stations around the Wisconsin. You can get a list of the shows. You can click on individual episodes and listen back to them. Each hour is a different episode, or you can subscribe to all of them by a podcast. Head over to civicmedia.us or wherever you get your podcasts. Brittany Merlot not with us today. The weather note for you is that expect temperatures to be in the mid-50s to low 60s. Winds are going to be picking up compared to yesterday, so watch for elevated fire conditions. Things will be dry and mostly sunny today, but the weekend is going to be a wet one for pretty much everybody. Actively wet and windy with two different systems coming in between Friday and Sunday. Some severe storms are possible, 1 to 2 inches of rain for many parts of the state. And again, just keep it here on your favorite Civic Media station to get the latest local forecast. Rob says good morning from Tigerton. Sunny and 42. He's got his lawn tractors ready for the upcoming mowing season. And he wants to give a shout out to Adam Kirsten from Adam's Small Engine in Clintonville for doing an excellent job on his tractors. Again, he's our best sales rep here as far as, you know, the dimensions that he can get, the sponsorships that he can get by posting something on Facebook.
I love that. I love it when we're promoting good business and good customer service for small businesses in town. That's great.
Yes. No, you keep doing that, Rob. And the rest of you, go get some friends and promote them, too.
I don't have any, Pat.
Mm. Okay. Well, more room for you, Rob. Bring on some more. all right. Dr. Lyerly is here in part because of a rather important day in the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday that dealt with a state abortion ban and whether it runs afoul of or somehow supersedes a federal law that deals with treating patients who are facing emergencies. Kristen, let's start by talking about what is the federal law, which is known by the acronym EMTALA, E-M-T-A-L-A. What's EMTALA? And then take us into the Idaho ban and the dispute.
EMTALA is the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. This is that federal law that says that if you show up at an emergency department and you have a problem, you have to be treated. They cannot turn you away. This is a law that any hospital that is accepting federal funds, Medicare funds, must follow. So it is our obligation to take care of you. But what we're seeing in Idaho is that if people show up with complicated pregnancies, often scared, bleeding, suffering, looking for help, in Idaho, unless your life is immediately threatened, abortion care is not offered. That's it.
Again, so the justices, at least some of the progressive justices, and some would argue that conservative justice, Amy Coney Barrett, were really put off by at least one of the male attorneys who was saying in so many words, and you know, I don't mean to get graphic here, folks, this early in the morning, but the case is this important, that, you know, well, you're bleeding, ma'am, but you're not bleeding enough. And there are apparently far too many people on one side of the aisle that are perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, I don't like to get graphic either, but if we don't get graphic, then we all of this continues to be dictated by politics instead of healthcare. So that's why we have to talk about these things, and we have to talk about them in scientific terms. I was heartened to hear Amy Coney Barrett, who is the mother of seven, and she has had a miscarriage, so she has a personal experience that is directly related to what they're talking about here. And you heard it with Justice Sotomayor, you heard it with Justice Brown, people who understood truly in a very personal way what this means get it. And that was their line of questioning. And on the other side, from Justice Alito, you were hearing language like they were calling pregnancies, he was calling pregnancies unborn children. That's the kind of terminology I use with my patient in an emotional setting, trying to build a connection. But it's not medically accurate, it's not legally accurate, and frankly, it's completely inappropriate in this context.
Well, exactly. And we're talking about the difference between the law and values, because everybody has different values. They may come on at some point in the process of, you know, when does life begin, and what do you think of this, you know, fertilized egg versus this fetal development. But at some point, the law is the law, and the Idaho lawyers really made it sound like, well, we can decide this on a case by case basis. And I heard the justices pushing back saying no, because then doctors won't treat people because they don't know how this particular case is going to be treated. They need more certainty, as do women.
Right. And as a patient, the last thing that you want is for your doctor to be thinking, I know what to do for you medically, but let me just talk to a lawyer to figure out if that's the thing that I can do for you based on Idaho law. And, you know, it really came down in these arguments to the difference between life and health. And I think that that is a critical argument here, because yes, when someone is actively dying, I know what to do, but you don't want it to get to that point, because as you get closer to that point, we see more lifelong medical complications, whether we're talking about strokes or heart attacks or other permanent disabilities or mental health conditions, which, folks, mental health issues and substance abuse issues related to mental health are the number one reason that women die related to pregnancy. It's mental health, not physical health. And this was not even, as they were debating this yesterday, you could tell that the folks from Idaho couldn't even go there. They couldn't even begin to understand the impact of your mental health, not just right now, but well into the future.
There are still, even after this, you know, questions about how will the court come down on this? And again, will it set any kind of a precedent, or will it be, well, that's what Idaho's doing. Okay, which state is going to come to us next?
It could be Wisconsin.
And it could very well be Wisconsin, you know, despite the way the Dane County judge, you know, ruled. And even though we know the current makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we don't know what an appeals court is going to say. And we don't know if somebody's going to look for a toehold to drag that case before the U.S. Supreme Court, which is 66-3 right wingers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Wisconsin really could be that. So I was reading about this in my favorite British newspaper, The Guardian. I'm always looking to catch up on the cricket matches there. And I find you quoted in there day before yesterday, I think it was, or maybe yesterday. Is there anybody you don't that isn't talking to you because you know your stuff on this subject?
Well, I've been working with my fellow OBGYNs all across the country. And, you know, Emily Corrigan, Amelia Huntsberger is one of the over 50 doctors who has left Idaho in the last 2 years. There are no high-risk pregnancy specialists in Idaho anymore. If nothing else, look at the exodus of doctors from the state, mostly in rural areas. That should tell you something. Doctors do not feel comfortable working in this environment, so they're leaving, and that leaves pregnant people without care.
And for the higher risk pregnancies, where at one point maybe women would have, you know, just driven to another state, there's been an uptick in flights where I'm sure it's the doctors saying, nope, I'm going to recommend you be airlifted to this hospital in another state, because there are people talking seriously about stopping people at the border of their state and saying, "Oh, are you heading across the state line for an abortion? You know, we're going to arrest you or mm-hmm. prevent you from getting across," which sounds absolutely bonkers. And yet that's exactly how some people are writing proposed state laws.
Oh, yeah. We're seeing this, especially in Texas, in some of the western counties in Texas. They're trying to legislate. They're trying to like police the highways out of Texas so that they can stop people and punish people who are seeking abortion care. Like, that is where we're at right now in this country, just to prevent people from getting health care. And it is having an effect. We know that more people are dying in these banned states. We know that people are being forced to carry pregnancies in unsafe conditions. And these are people who often can't afford, whether that means afford physically or afford financially, can't afford to continue this pregnancy. This is not healthcare. This is not healthcare.
Mm-mm. And I'm going to give the last word here to, from our text line, Lynn in Oconomowoc says, "Pat, just a weird thought. Can these state legislators be charged with practicing medicine without a license or some other version of that?" And Lynn, I can't say you're wrong. I mean, because that's what they're trying to do when they try to micromanage to this level.
Mm-hmm. You're so right, Lynn. I have definitely thought about this as political malpractice, but it is, could it be medical malpractice on their end? Yeah, they have no idea what they're talking about, and they don't frankly care about people. All they care about is themselves.
All right. Well, thank you for giving us an update. We know that they may decide probably not until the last day of the session, which is in late June. Again, decisions could come at any point, but those controversial ones, they seem to put off as much as possible here. So, Kristen, thanks for that. We're going to talk about fake electors and total immunity before the Supreme Court coming up after the break. First, we're going to check a little sports here at 7:18 and start by telling you that the Brewers were able to edge the Pittsburgh Pirates last night 3-2. Bryce Wilson started for the Brewers and pitched 4 1/3 innings. Freddy Peralta will be on the mound this morning. Yes, this morning. They wrap up that four-game series in Pittsburgh. You can listen starting at 11 o'clock this morning on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. And for the Milwaukee Bucks, their Eastern Conference first-round playoff series is tied at a game apiece. Game 3 is Friday in Indianapolis. Do not know yet if Giannis is going to be recovered from that left calf strain and playing or not, but you can find out by tuning in 4 o'clock tomorrow on News from the Center, Richland Center, Lake Erin Amory, 98Q Country in Park Falls, locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. Where's Wisconsin going with these fake electors as another state brings charges against them? We'll have details next. You're up north. Yeah, yeah, the old guy picked this song out. I did. I was surfing the radio dial yesterday.
Oh, were you?
And up comes this song from Shakira and Cardi B. Oh. It's all in Spanish. I don't know what the heck they're saying, but it's got a good beat and I can dance to it. So expect a little bit more of that.
So proud of you.
Thank you. See, it can happen. Before we get into fake electors and two different Donald Trump trials that will be in different courts today, as we continue talking about the Supreme Court's arguments on Idaho's abortion ban, Katie is on the line. Katie, good morning. Katie, are you with me?
I am. Sorry. Hi. I've been listening to this topic, and I sympathize with you as a radio host that you have to continue to talk about this heartbreaking topic, because it just is. And I think I had an ectopic pregnancy, and I was called by my doctor. Guess what? You're going to have to come in, and we're going to have to do something about this. You can't have it anymore. And if you don't, you will die. So it was a simple medical thing, simple, mm-hmm. but it simply is a medical thing. But that's where the confusion lies for me. So every time I think about abortion, I think, oh, what a horrible thing for anybody to have to go through. Nobody's happy about it. The doctor, the patient, nobody's happy about it. So it has to come down to the law. When things get complicated, you have to lean on the law. And I can't believe we're talking about this again. When I was a I've been a radio talk show host myself. In the 90s, there was Roe v. Wade. It was, let's not talk about it. There's no need to. It's settled law. So I wonder, Dr. Lyerly talked about how she has to change her language with her patients, because when you have a wanted and healthy pregnancy, it's mom and child, of course. But when the fact remains that it's no longer a viable pregnancy, or heartbreakingly, a desired pregnancy, the law protects the person who's carrying it. It seems like it should be simple, but it's so not. And I wonder how Dr. Lyerly handles that complexity in her life and in her practice and in her pursuit for leadership.
Katie, thank you very much for the question. Kristen?
Hey, that's Katie, first of all, I'm sorry for your loss. An ectopic pregnancy is a loss, and it's a medical complication, and it's just plain hard. And I'll tell you, there's a simple answer. I handle it by focusing on my patient and by hearing what my patient needs and knowing that I have the skills to be able to help her through this time in her life and take care of her afterwards. My patient isn't, I'm not a mechanic and she doesn't need an oil change. I am a doctor. She is a human being. She has a uterus and a body and a mind and a heart and people in her life who love her. And I always try to take this very holistic approach to taking care of my patients, recognizing that not only do we have to solve this medical problem right now, but she is going to continue to think about this down the road. And I mean, look at you. You're talking about your ectopic pregnancy. You know, in Ohio, they actually introduced legislation a few years ago that you would have to take an ectopic pregnancy, which by definition is a pregnancy in a place usually outside of the uterus where it can't survive, that you would have to take that and implant it inside the uterus. And that's impossible.
Oh my God.
Nobody has ever done that, but they were going to legislate that. So that's why we as doctors and patients are we have to speak up right now so that we can override this political interference in our own medical care. And hopefully once we've got the law in a place where it's protecting patients instead of harming them, then we don't have to talk about it so much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Katie, thank you so much. Have a great
day. Thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
We appreciate you calling in and sharing your story with us. All right. Let's flip to other matters that are also taking up our time in politics. And in this case, the U.S. Supreme Court. Donald Trump will be back in court in New York for his hush money election interference trial as testimony resumes with the former publisher of the National Enquirer. Meanwhile, in the U.S. Supreme Court, they're going to hear arguments over whether former presidents should be completely immune from prosecution for actions that were taken during their time as president, so that even if they committed crimes while president, they can't be charged once they are no longer the commander in chief. And my own take on this is very simple. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because that's not what this Supreme Court conservative majority was looking to do. There is no case here. The Court of Appeals, the step before the U.S. Supreme Court, smacked this down in record time with essentially a one-sentence decision that said, get out of here. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have kings in this country. But then the conservative justices on the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, we'll take the case and we'll get around to it. And we'll get around to it. And it has been months, and that's the delay that Donald Trump had been hoping for, so that there wouldn't be resolution of this until after perhaps he'd been elected president and can dismiss all of the cases against him. The Supreme Court, a conservative majority in my mind, is being an accessory to this crime. But Kristen, this is where we are right now, that a former president and presidential candidate is in two different courts at the same time with four, five, six different cases swirling around him.
Pat, you've been in news for a long time. Do you recall the world having been so crazy? I mean, things have happened. I remember growing up with lots of things in the news, but sure. Something like this on top of something like what we were just talking about, it just feels like we are just in a different world right now.
Well, we are, because once again, you know, going back to Watergate, there were things that were clearly right and wrong. And you had Republicans that would say to then President Nixon, we're not supporting you on this because of what you did. It ran counter to the law. Now we have a rather spineless group of United States senators who had not one but two opportunities to look at the mountain of evidence and say, we are better than this in this country. And no, former President Trump, you no longer represent us in the Republican Party. And, you know, we want to disassociate ourselves and disavow this. And instead, they're just running into his arms and saying, we will overlook these things. And we will, as you've heard from other senators recently on talk shows, they've said, even if he's convicted, you know, he is still my guy. So the craziness isn't everybody, but the craziness certainly does start with elected officials who have put party over country in a way we just did not see before. Not that there wasn't corruption, not that there wasn't shenanigans, but to this point is, to me, the stunning hallmark of this generation.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and, you know, I really have to hand it to my predecessor, former Congressman Mike Gallagher, who I disagree with on many things regarding policy, but, you know, he had the guts to stand up to Donald Trump on January 6th, and he had the guts to walk away at this point and to tell his party no. So that is honorable, and I respect that. But when you look at what's happening really with the Supreme Court, we are truly deciding whether a president is invincible.
Yeah, is a king. Predecessor. I like the way you got that in there.
You like that?
Confidence is a good thing.
Kristen for Wisconsin, Pat. KristenForWisconsin.com.
I guess so, yeah. She had headed up the Women Win Wisconsin segment. She's now seeking to win herself and has turned the duties over to motherhood for good. And we will have Women Win Wisconsin coming up next. You're up north. Here we are, Thursday morning, 7:34, and we've worked our way to our Women Win Wisconsin segment with music chosen by Dr. Lyerly, who hangs on here along with Kate Duffy, Nicole Slavin, and Representative Lori Palmieri joining us this week. I could say good morning to any of you first, but of course it's going to be new mama times two, Kate Duffy. Kate, congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I have now a like 10 or 11 day old.
10 or 11. It's,
I can't, like I said, you know, we did the week birthday and now it's like all the same.
It's all old hat at this point. Yep, I hear you.
Second babies.
Yeah.
But you put up a video with your little guy meeting his little sister for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the Motherhood for Good site, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's on our Instagram.
On Instagram. And it's the most adorable video you're going to see today. I don't care how many times you doom scroll TikTok. If you go over and get this on the Motherhood for Good Instagram, it's the pick me up that you need. So
yes,
thank
and
you
somehow
for
it like blew up over on TikTok too.
Oh, good.
And it's like the nicest corner of the internet. There's like 200,000 some comments and they're all nice. And I'm like, this never happens. So I don't know what happened here, but there's a little slice of nice humanity.
There is. There absolutely is for moments like this. So again, congratulations. Good to see you here. I wasn't sure if you were going to
be here. Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
But Nicole was definitely more than prepared to hold down the fort. So
always.
Nicole, why don't you set up our guest that we're meeting in this week's Women Win Wisconsin.
Absolutely. We are so excited today to have Representative Lori Palmieri from Assembly District 54 in Oshkosh, the Oshkosh area, with us today and to talk about her campaign for reelection and, you know, all the awesome stuff that she's doing. So welcome, Lori, and thank you so much for finding time for us today.
I'm thrilled to be here. This is exciting.
It is. So give folks a little bit of a personal background about yourself and your runs for election and your experience till now.
Yes, absolutely. So my name is Lori Palmieri, and I am representing the 54th Assembly District, which is mostly Oshkosh. New maps include a couple of townships north of us now. And I am a proud veto protector grandmother with grit. I have 7 years on the city council here in Oshkosh, 2 terms as mayor. And I took my fanny pack to Madison to get things done, to solve problems for everyday folks.
Wow. All right. Tell us about the campaign so far. I mean, especially with a new map, have you spent much time in the new parts of the district?
Yes. Actually, 44 miles have been added in the northern section of the district, getting into several townships, as I pointed out. And right now we are deep into signature collection, trying to get my 400 signatures in 2 weeks. It's a little bit of an ambitious goal.
Absolutely. That has to be tough too, because you also have time, you actually have to do your job as well while you're trying to get those signatures collected. Have you been reaching out? What's that experience been like with that additional area now north of Oshkosh? Have you set up anything or done any kind of meet and greets or anything?
Well, the first event that I attended was actually a Tammy Baldwin event up there. And I met some of our friendly folks in that area that hosted up there and got to know a few of those. And I'm planning my route to do my doors after signatures. I think I'm going to have to get myself an e-bike. During my campaign in 22, I bicycled a lot around town, but I'm not quite up to the 44-mile challenge yet. So, meeting some of those folks through like little town board meetings, towns association, understanding what it means and how important where the manure pit gets placed. Pretty big agricultural considerations up there.
Yeah, I was going to ask, in that area in particular, both the district you're familiar with and kind of the additional areas, what are some of the policy priorities that are important to constituents up there? And what have you been doing in Madison to kind of serve those constituents? And what do you have your eye on for this next election cycle that you're going to be keeping in mind as you talk to these people and trying to make change in Madison for?
Sure. So this past session, number one, I reintroduced the Wisconsin Equal Rights Amendment. Believe it or not, after 50 years, Wisconsin's constitution does not have that amendment in there. So that was pretty critical. Fall recovery legislation for seniors. We got that through a Senate hearing, which is amazing for a first time session.
Yeah.
I introduced a PFAS phase out in products, along with being one of the co-authors on the comprehensive PFAS legislation. And, you know, with new maps this coming session, we're going to lead a new majority for Wisconsin. I am running to protect women's reproductive rights, healthcare access for all, protect our future generations' environment, and address housing and education crises. And of course, we have to fight for labor rights. But since we just got these new maps, I haven't had the opportunity to do constituent work or liaison work, because technically that doesn't happen till after reelection, right? So been serving the district as is, mostly the city of Oshkosh, and we'll continue to do that for the rest of this year. One thing I do want to share with people, because it's a bit confusing, and I've been either at the doors or at events, people are a little confused about which district they're in. So if you go to legis.wisconsin.gov, find my legislators, it will tell you what your current district representative is, and also it will tell you who's drawn in to that district coming next year. It's a little confusing. So people are needing some assistance and education on the new maps and what district they fall in.
Yeah, that's really helpful. We've seen a couple different websites out there, and I was just clicking on this one now. If folks go to that website, it's nice. There's actually a little key, and you can click on like 2022, the old ones, versus you can switch it over to the new ones, which is really helpful.
And you can, confusing. When you when you go to that, also find my legislators, you can just enter your address, which makes it super simple.
Yeah. Great tip.
Representative Palmieri, it has not been easy to serve in the role you've been serving in Madison in the last couple of years. It's been an incredibly challenging, and I bet, what's the word that I'm looking for? You're trying to do so much. All of the things that you've just been talking about, you haven't seen a lot of victories because the environment hasn't been ripe for that. But that's all about to change. With these new maps, we have the potential to actually be able to follow through on some of this really important legislation that you have introduced and that you champion. What is your vision for the upcoming legislative session, and what would you like to see?
Well, my vision is that we will take the majority, and that we will work together. And, you know, there's not a lot of press. There's more press and media coverage on all of the awfulness, right? The bad bills. And we reviewed over, I don't know, maybe 2,000 bills in the last session. Many of them were awful. I would not ever sign on to. But also, you know, that veto protection was so important because there were only two of us protecting the governor's veto because of the potential for a veto override. So the vision is to get that majority, to get rid of some of this bad legislation that squeaked through, to reintroduce the good stuff and work together. And, you know, I pride myself, we live in a very purple district here. And I'm calling the new Senate District 18, by the way, that we got shifted north into the Purple Coast.
Because
the western quadrant of Lake Winnebago, and it hugs the lakeshore. As a matter of fact, my district, for those of you here, goes a little bit west all the way over to Lake Butamore. So that's all new territory. Folks are really excited about the opportunity for getting that majority, supporting other candidates and women candidates who are running for the first time. I love mentoring those folks and recruiting in these new districts or under these new maps. It's amazing how many people come and say, I can't believe we actually have new fair maps.
Now, we have discussed a lot, and we have a series running in our newsletter this week about what didn't get done before Republicans said, you know, we would like a 9-month paid vacation, please. And so today, for example, in today's newsletter, which you can sign up for at upnorthnews.wi.com, click newsletter in the top banner. In there is an article about how processing absentee ballots, you know, the day before would have made things easier. And Republicans know it. But it enables them to continue on with the conspiracy about late night counting of votes. So that's today's article about it. In under that same umbrella, what didn't get done that this legislative session could have done? What else is on your list, or that you think your constituents would put on their list if they knew more about the inner workings of this legislature?
Yeah. So absolutely, one of the big things that happened is back and forth on $125 million that, you know, was in the Gov's budget for addressing PFAS and protecting our clean water, mitigating some of these impacts and testing. And that, unfortunately, did not get out the door. And, you know, the governor had to veto the last version because it would have allowed polluters to be considered innocent landowners. And, you know, that's a little bit like, you know, insider baseball, but we would have liked to have seen more money go to our higher education, to K-12, childcare, so many things that, you know, we got little incremental bites on, but so much more is needed.
Oh, that's putting it quite mildly. I mean, we talked earlier this morning about not just the PFAS money that they're sitting on, the hospital money that they're sitting on, the UW money that they sat on for the longest time, and now opioid settlement money. you know, that they're just sitting on and not putting to work in the state the way that we should. Nicole or Kate, I'll leave it to you to start to ask. We'll start to wrap things up here as far as one or two more questions.
If I may, just one more thing.
Sure.
There were so many hearings that did not get held in the assembly that, you know, they might have gone through Senate, like my Falls Recovery Bill. It made it through the Senate, but we couldn't get the hearing on the assembly side. Hearings have to be held, public hearings where people can come to the Capitol. They can testify on things. It really is a quite an obstacle.
Yeah, and I'd imagine that's something when you are out on doors more and talking to people, no matter what side of the aisle they fall on, everybody realizes that things are stagnant and we need to make more progress and we need to have those hearings and get people talking. We need to get the government working again. And that's something you and a lot of the Democrats are pushing for, no matter where people fall. So thank you for mentioning that. It's so important and we want to make sure people know that. How can people help you right now? What would be the most help? How can they find you? What do you need to know?
Sure. I'm on Instagram, Palmieri for Assembly, Facebook, Reelect Palmieri for Assembly 54. The website is palmieriforassembly.com. And I'm certainly looking to have house parties to get, like I said, 400 signatures in 2 weeks is a little ambitious. Would like to get that put to bed. And of course, I just want to hear from folks what's important to them in the coming session. Sometimes we think we know, but until you're out on those doors or having those conversations, you can learn so much, really.
Very much so. And one Facebook comment from Janet says, good morning. Always so good to hear all these smart, articulate, wise women on the show, keeping us informed. Thanks. I'm really sending this to say I'm proud to share this birth date with not only the wonderful Ella Fitzgerald, who we played earlier, but the great blues musician Albert King, one of Stevie Ray Vaughan's big influences. Just saying, love the program, listen every day. But again, you got smart, articulate, and wise, and I'm looking and I see smart, articulate. Kristen, I think you get wise just by virtue of birth date. We're the wise ones together here. Lori Palmieri, thank you so much for being part of this week's Women in Wisconsin segment. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Nicole, Kate, so great to see you. Congratulations again, Kate, and we'll do this again next week.
Sounds good.
Luke Mathers is up next as we look at last night's Top Chef. Next, you're up north. You'll do tomorrow on the program, we continue our series of Friday morning visits with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel, who has a show about legal matters on every Saturday morning live, and then again on Sunday mornings here across the Civic Media Radio Network. But Jim Santel at 7:20 tomorrow morning. Luke Mathers joins us as we take a look at last night's episode of Top Chef. It was episode 6. We thought there were only 9 chef testants left.
What do you mean?
But no, they brought 2 more back, one old and one new. So you then had 11 people on a show that was entitled Chaos Cuisine. Mr. Mathers, what did you think of Chaos Cuisine as a theme?
Well, I told you the Last Chance Kitchen was going to be a component of this season of Top Chef, that there was an interesting curveball, and I didn't want to spoil it because it's one of those things that's not really, it's a show within the show kind of thing. And so it was exciting to see the first episode of Cutthroat Kitchen this year, when Top Chef let all of the viewers know there was in fact not 15 contestants this year, there were 16. And the 16th contestant was starting out in Last Chance Kitchen. So had to go through a gauntlet of all of the eliminated chefs to get the opportunity to come back. And Sue, Chef Sue, who is a chef in Chicago, who Dan Jacobs, Wisconsin chef that is the hometown kid for this season, knew Sue as soon as he walked in the door, but was wondering why he was there. And so if you hadn't been following up with the Last Chance Kitchen, it was a little bit of a curveball coming, but Kelsey and I have been watching them throughout the year so far. And so it was a surprise that 2 chef testants came back from Cutthroat or I keep wanting to call it Cutthroat Kitchen, which is a different Food Network show, but Last Chance Kitchen. It's very cutthroat.
I'm going to say at the start of the show there, as they were also talking to some of the chef testants, and now I'm just twisting the knife for Greg here. And
I drowned you all out. I said it once.
I'm thinking about other things right now. I'm just...
And I can't recall anymore now if it was Kevin or Manny, but talking about, again, being an immigrant and, I mean, starting at the very bottom and working his way up and cooking and becoming a chef. And his whole thing was, his exact quote was, you know, in America, if you want it, you can have it. You just have to work hard for it.
That's Kevin, who is, he moved to America from France and started off at a restaurant in Las Vegas and now owns his own pastry shop in Texas. And so, yes, that was how the episode started off. And then we got the curveball that two more contestants were re-entering the game for 11. But they let everybody know during the quickfire rounds that, hey, because two came back, this means two of you are leaving at any given time from this point on. So they weren't planning for a double elimination later on, but now there will be one.
This
so
there doesn't was... seem fair. This...
Well, that's reality TV, Greg. Nothing is fair. I mean,
if I get fired from a job, I don't get brought back in like a week and a half later, like, he's back and one of you are going to be fired next.
It could happen. Actually, this actually does jive very much on track with medical residency in obstetrics. Sometimes people are kicked out of the program and then they operate on, you know, piglets and horses for a while. And then they're brought back.
You've been watching Top Doctor, okay? Stop watching that show.
That's Top Vet, not Top Chef. Vet.
Yeah, but if you know enough about veterinary medicine, you then can become a state legislator and dictate, you know, women's health care rights.
He brought it back around, folks. That's what we call a long walk to a callback.
That's right.
All wrong. So, can we just talk about food? I'm getting really hungry, let's get to the food. I'm really enjoying that.
The first round involved being in the dairy state, and so they got to meet with Christina Tosi, is it, from Milk Bar, and they had to make a dairy dessert. Wide open, just make us a dairy dessert. And here's 45 minutes. What these people can do in 45 minutes just continues to blow me away.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So they had an excellent round of dessert, dairy-based desserts. And it is very interesting because none of what I would do with dairy was what was up there.
No, but they found ways. And Michelle, one of my favorites, because she's a barbecue pit master.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't work with other things, but she's won like the pasta round. She's won a dessert round.
She was the most shocked as well when two contestants returned at the start of the episode. She was kind of just in awe, staring there with, I have two more people I have to try to go up against.
No, the staring in awe happened next when they brought in the guest chef for the elimination round, which was Maddie Matheson, which, I mean, they all just swooned, to which I can now finally ask Luke Mathers, who's Maddie Matheson?
He, for a really long time, he was like a YouTube celebrity, kind of like he does a YouTube cooking show, and he's the face of DoorDash for, I believe, DoorDash's commercials now, where he'll be like cooking things and he'll be like, oh wait, I don't have this ingredient, get it on DoorDash. Then he also is a supporting actor in the show The Bear, which is a Chicago-based show, cooking show as well. And so he plays one of the comic relief characters in The Bear, and he's pretty funny.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Kristen.
How can I be a person who eats this food?
Like, I think we missed it. I wanted to know too. Nobody told me last year while this was going on.
I mean, we talk about this every week.
The time looking in the background at the people, like hoping that I know one of them.
One of the Journal Sentinel reporters was one of the attendees for the Supper Club episode last week.
Wow. So the round involved chaos cooking, they said. And they just said, make something chaotic, divergent, imaginative, just go wild. And they tried many different things, but Dan from Milwaukee got what everybody thought was the crowd favorite. He basically made funnel cake and then
put seafood all over it.
He put everything over. It was garbage, and in a good way. I mean, just everything.
Like,
everything on there.
And they all said that they wanted to recreate it in a restaurant that they have, but he was that close. He must have been second for this week. But
And now here comes your spoiler alert. Again, tune away if you're going to watch it later. But Rossica, who had won two or three different rounds previously,
of them, I believe. Yeah,
was the one eliminated. The she made an eggplant dish that was tasteless, bland. Again. And so she was off. And Michelle almost got cut, but did not. And then finally, just enough time to tease. All they teased about next week is they're at American Family Field, and there's a sausage race. And I got a feeling we're going to get some serious entertainment with racing sausages and probably sausage dishes as well.
It's usually a head-to-head. It's going to be a team challenge, head-to-head matchup. There's going to be a real good one, and I can't wait to tune in.
I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you again, as always,
for the
update. Look at that. I think Greg's paying more attention. I think each time we're getting him a little bit closer.
No, you are wrong right now, Pat.
He was busy watching TikTok on his phone. Kristen, thank you again for the visit. Take care there.
Love hanging out with you guys.
All right. Thanks for joining us on Up North News Radio for this Thursday morning. We'll see you tomorrow.